Welcome to Deception in the Last Days with your host, Randy Shelton. Randy is a member of the Biblical Discernment and Research Center. He has been studying cults and new religious movements for over 30 years. Join Randy as he discerns the deception going on now in the last days.
We've been looking at a Christian magazine that's not very Christian, let's say, or as T.A. McMahon of the Brian Call would say in the title of his article, A Berean Exercise, Christian Magazines, Part 1. And we've been looking at Christianity Today and some of the problems. Specifically, he has addressed the issue of Alcoholics Anonymous and Christianity Today, promoting that in one of the articles. And so you can go to the archives. I'm not going to do much review, but because I want to get back to where I left off and keep moving here. But we were looking at, you know, Bill Wilson, who founded the Alcoholics Anonymous, and we were looking at, you know, the fact that his organization says they're not a religious organization, and yet he spoke in his big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, he made the statement that he parted ways with certain so-called religious people or ministers, and of course they were conservative, fundamental type believers in the Bible, but he didn't part ways with others. And I was pointing out some of that, and that led me to examine a book called The Living of These Days, which is the autobiography of Harry Emerson Fosdick, one of the main modernists in the battle between fundamentalism and modernism some time ago, many years ago. And so we were looking at some of these things. We were looking at this book, and I wanted to point out something that I had overlooked that I wanted to mention before. You know, that as far as the ministers that he that he parted company with, let's say, or those that he didn't part company with, those that he was comfortable with, the Oxford Group and Harry Emerson Fosdick, and then, of course, some of the Catholics leaders and some of the more liberal denominations of the time. But I had left out a note that I wanted to point out from the PBS series, which I alluded to in the last couple podcasts. And it was entitled Bill Wilson, the Creative Force Behind Alcoholics Anonymous. And in that series, it made mention of the fact that John D. Rockefeller Jr. Was already putting money into temperance groups, and Bill Wilson's brother-in-law was able to get an appointment with Rockefeller, and he gave him $5,000, which wasn't a whole lot of money to Rockefeller, and it really wasn't that much to help. But this was in the early going of this group. And so I wanted to point that out because later in as we examine this book, we will go back to that point about John D. Rockefeller, because Rockefeller was also friends with Harry Emerson Fosdick. And the point, of course, being that I'm trying to point out here is that this movement, the Alcoholics Anonymous movement, which claims to not be religious but actually is spiritual, or as the old saying would be, well, I'm not religious but I'm very spiritual, meaning I don't believe in the Bible but I'm open to any other kind of spirituality that's out there. That's my paraphrase. That's my definition. And so that's kind of what I'm kind of hammering away at, as I tend to have a tendency to do. Now, I'm going to really go to where I left off in that book by Harry, that autobiography of Harry Emerson Fosdick. And I left off on page 149. And he said, I had seriously and I think rightly committed myself to a tolerant policy, believing that the belated doctrinal issues then crowding into the center of attention were really marginal. Now, we're talking about the battle between fundamentalism and modernism, or what we would call progressivism today, or, you know, red-letter Christians, the liberal variety of so-called Christians who aren't really Christians because they don't even believe in the Bible. They challenge the Bible in the same way like the devil would challenge the truth of the Bible. And the fundamentalists who were defending the essential doctrines of the faith. So this is how he referred to it. These doctrines, they were really marginal. You know, to this liberal, essential doctrines were marginal. And he goes on to say, and would so turn out to be, and that therefore the church ought not to split because of them, but hold together and ride out the storm. Again, there was a liberal asking non-liberals to become liberals, in essence. You know, let's just get along, let's just be tolerant, and let's all get into interfaith and all that. But anyway, moving into another, a few of his statements from the book on page 152 and 153, he said, first, the fundamentalists themselves grew increasingly vehement. In pulpits, magazines, pamphlets, and mass meetings, they assailed the liberals and called on them to leave the evangelical churches. Well, duh, of course, leave the evangelical churches. Start some pseudo-Christian group. Call it whatever you want. Don't call yourself Christians. Anyway, I'm ranting. I said their slogan, speaking of course, conservative Christians, their slogan was concisely stated in a mass meeting of Presbyterian fundamentalists in New York. We have a right to demand that those who serve as pastors of our churches shall hew to the line in matters of faith. And I wrote in my notes, of course, no wolves should be allowed in the pulpits of true churches. You know, what's the problem here? But being a liberal, you know, he's stating this as though it's a bad thing that fundamentalists are saying, you know, we have a right to demand that those who are calling themselves pastors should toe the line or hew the line, as the expression uses, in the matters of faith. Yeah. You know, if you're a wolf, get out of here. You know, don't call yourself a Christian pastor who's supposed to protect the sheep. Anyway, he goes on and says, John Roach Stratton, pastor of the Calvary Baptist Church in New York, tore loose. We are driven, he said, to the conclusion that Dr. Fosdick is not only a Baptist bootlegger, but that he is also a Presbyterian outlaw without the slightest personal ill will and with no desire to injure him personally. I nevertheless declare, in the light of Bible teaching and in the name of eternal truth, that Dr. Harry Emerson Fosdick is a religious outlaw. He is the Jesse James of the theological world. And again, I'm spending this time showing you, pointing out to you, that people like Harry Emerson Fosdick, you know, went out of their way to endorse Alcoholics Anonymous. So this is a good thing. And it makes sense. The more we dig into it, and I think the more you'll see. In addition to his other chameleon accomplishments, and this is the same, I'm sorry, this is a continuing quote. This is another quote from a conservative. He says, in addition to his other chameleon accomplishments, and I've never seen this word before, the floriferous Fosdick is a professor in probably the most heretical and heterogeneous theological seminary in all the round world. And of course I would say, yeah, true. So what's wrong with that? You know, that's Union Seminary. And so, yes, of course it was, you know. Anyway, so Fosdick, he's all upset because this man's telling it like it is. Says, there is little doubt that he fills the position without grace, but with distinction, to the extinction of the truth of the Scriptures. And while he lacks faith in the fundamental truths of Christianity, it's dollars to donuts that he has faith enough in the monthly paycheck to deposit it at the bank. You know, I like this being an autobiography written by Fosdick himself. You know, he's writing these things that he apparently is outraged by. But, you know, when he's quoting these people, he's quoting people that are telling it exactly the way it is and exactly the truth about Fosdick. It goes on, preaching Sunday after Sunday amid such angry denunciations was not easy, Fosdick said. I did my best not to let the controversy dominate my ministry or make me forget what preaching was really meant to accomplish. And I wrote, which is what? what would he say that preaching is meant to accomplish? He said earlier in the book, he had talked about, you know, maybe he could end up being a teacher of comparative religions, but not a minister, but some of these. And yet there he is. He's a minister claiming that, you know, he knows what preaching is meant to accomplish. But he doesn't, or he didn't. Of course, he's going on to his reward. I hope he somehow came to know the true Christ before he died. Charles Clayton Morrison, then editor of the Christian Century, wrote an article about me at that time. Two sentences of which I have always especially appreciated. This, I don't know, it's just, I can't help but laugh. What I like most about Fosdick, the heretic, is that he does not seem to care about capitalizing his heresy. So Fosdick was happy to hear this man say, well, you know, Fosdick the heretic, he's not in it just for the money. You know, he's not just capitalizing on his heresy. He's a heretic, but, and this was probably tongue-in-cheek, because I think the Christian Century itself was a liberal magazine. So for him to say he appreciated to be called a heretic, but at least he wasn't a money-grubbing heretic, you know, was something he appreciated. Well, I doubt that he appreciated being called a heretic, although he refers to himself that way. Again, tongue-in-cheek, probably. Anyway, moving along here. In his book, he also goes on to say, as one typical Presbyterian reactionary, which is another word for a fundamentalist, put it, how can men who are honest stay in the Presbyterian Church when they no longer believe in her doctrines? Good point. And I have a note here. And I cannot read it. Isn't that embarrassing? Or how even to call themselves Christians? That's what my note says. How can men who are honest stay in the Presbyterian Church when they no longer believe in their doctrines? And like I say, or even call themselves Christians? I don't get it. I don't understand liberal Christians, so-called liberal Christians. There is only one honest way for these brethren to act. Let them get out. You know, again, he's quoting these people who would have been his enemies, the conservative real Christians. This meant, however, that the church's doctrines were finally to be frozen in terms which the fundamentalists chose, and that both all liberty of interpretation and all possibility of progress were to be denied. And I would, of course, say all liberty of reinterpretation of Scripture. Walter Martin had a little bit to say about that when he spoke about Paul Tillich and the liberals of his day, who introduced the concept of reinterpreting Scripture and redefining theological terms the same way cults do. So, anyway, and progress to be denied is the quote. It says, no. I see. It says that the church's doctrines were finally to be frozen in terms which the fundamentalists chose. And I made a note, no. In which God chose. You know, God is the one who chose the essential doctrines of the faith. That's why he put them in his word. But those who attack the word of God, of course, would refer to fundamentalists or conservatives as being the ones who are choosing the doctrines to be believed. So this is what you deal with when you deal with heretics, false teachers. You pray for them. You love the sinner and you hate the sin, but you cannot be moved to follow their deceptions. Now, on page 158, John Kelman, a Scottish Presbyterian, quoted, he made a typical statement, and he says, part of the statement, the impression that ministers of this church, the Presbyterian Church, are bound to consider these forms of statement as essential is one which would have the most serious consequences on the minds of thinking men and women around us, and especially upon the mind of the rising generation. He was minister of the Fifth Avenue Presbyterian Church. You know, people from both sides of the issue, obviously he's going to quote in this book of his. Many of the most impressive voices in the Presbyterian Church, such as Henry Sloan Coffin and William P. Meredith, spoke in similar fashion. In other words, this John Kelman was pro-liberal all the way. Henry Van Dyke, then a professor at Princeton, came back for a Sunday in his former pulpit at the Brick Presbyterian Church, New York, to say roundly, these famous 5 points, and that, of course, are the 5 points, are the fundamentals of the faith that the fundamentalists brought forth, are not valid as a definition of the fundamentalists, of the fundamentals of Christian faith. They have no binding force. And I would say, liar. Henry Sloan Coffin, the first man he mentioned there, I've also seen him quoted and some of his old materials, his tapes, etc., made available in Sojourners magazine, which, of course, is the modern-day version of modernism or progressives, red-letter Christians, what have you, emerging church-type stuff. Now, he goes on to say, this is Fosdick, I had been reared in a church which has no authoritative written creeds and which gives to each congregation autonomous control over its own affairs. And, of course, I wrote, well, how about God's written word? You know, I'm not as much interested in authoritative written creeds as I am God's written word. If there was no authoritative written creeds, and I'm sure there was no authoritative written word of God for this man in the church he grew up in. He says, nevertheless, fundamentalism was no peculiarly Presbyterian problem. It was an urgent peril in all the evangelical churches, and by the selection of the reactionaries, I had been made, for the time being, a symbol of liberalism. All right. Now he talks about the Riverside Church, which is the church that that they built, the people that were wanted Fosdick to be doing what he was doing. And this is where I bring up John D. Rockefeller again. In chapter 8 of Fosdick's book, he says, as my ministry at Old First drew towards close, other opportunities began opening, none more improbable at first than the proposal from the Park Avenue Baptist Church in New York. John D. Rockefeller Jr. invited me to lunch and broached the matter, what I consider succeeding Cornelius Wolfkin, whose retirement was imminent. Now, going back to the PBS documentary that I mentioned, Rockefeller, you know, I had already mentioned that he had put money forward. And I guess what I'm saying is Rockefeller wanted Fosdick because he was liberal. Rockefeller wanted to help in some way Alcoholics Anonymous because apparently he was liberal. And Fosdick, of course, promoted Alcoholics Anonymous as well. So I just wanted to throw that in there. Once again, not to repeat myself too much, but I wanted to mention that. Now, also, some notes from that PBS. He said that this is what Bill Wilson said as he began to dictate the book. It was a six-step program first, and then it came out to be 12, which he said, which is good in Christian and in mystic lore. No dogma, no theology. He said that's what one guy said he loved about Alcoholics Anonymous. And then before I forget, again, the people that he chose to continue to company with who claimed to be Christian, a Catholic priest saw similarities between the Ignatian Order, and Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe this was Edward Dowling, who I had mentioned before, as one of those promoting Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay, I wanted to get that out of the way. I wanted to get that information out there. Now, getting back to Rockefeller inviting Fosdick to be the pastor of Park Avenue Baptist Church. Well, I won't get into all the details of that, but I will move on to, again, some backlash of fundamentalists. This excerpt from the Western Recorder, a Baptist publication, is fairly typical of many fundamentalist broadsides. It will be remembered that the said Fosdick professes to be a Baptist preacher and is the pastor of the First Presbyterian Church of New York City. As is well known, Mr. Fosdick denies the virgin birth of Christ, the inspiration of much of the Bible, and believes he has brute blood in his veins. And I believe that was the way at that time of them saying he believes in evolution, you know, that we came from monkeys. Brute blood in his veins. Now, he also, Fosdick wrote a book called A Pilgrimage to Palestine, and I wanted to mention a little bit about that. He mentions a Rabbi Magnus, who had high idealistic hopes of the service which his people would render not to Jews alone, but to the Arabs also. He said, so far as I am concerned, he said, I am not ready to try to achieve justice to the Jew through injustice to the Arab. I would regard it as an injustice to the Arab to put them under Jewish rule without their consent. He believed in a cultural Zionism that would put at the disposal of the Middle East modern agricultural and industrial techniques and methods of social service with which the Jews would usher in a new day for all the people. Now, he says, ominous portents of trouble, however, were obvious even 30 years ago. Now, when he talks about ushering in a new day, he was probably talking more about just in this world we live in here, in this transient temporal world. But, you know, I have to imagine that this man was probably a Reformed, was part of Reformed Judaism, which, of course, believes in a messianic age or era, one of global peace and harmony. They don't believe in a Messiah as so much as they believe in a messianic age brought on by human effort. And also, by the way, Israel has done so much in this world to help so many. And anyway, I am very pro-Israel. And this is, to me, an example of Fosdick, his liberal leanings, and even in the dealings towards Israel. He quotes, or part of what he says in his book, he says, on the Arab side, the Grand Mufti in Jerusalem, Husseini, said to me once at dinner, I am a man of religion and therefore a man of peace, but if the percentage of Jewish population in Palestine rises above a certain level, there will be war, you know. And yet God promised Israel, the land of Israel, to the Jews. This man concerned about the Jewish population, and I'm assuming, and I didn't do my homework on this, I mean, I didn't totally check this out, but this was around the same time period. I'm assuming that this Grand Mufti was basically Hitler's lapdog when Hitler came along, and of course was extremely anti-Semitic, and even had, as I recall, he had their own troops that served Hitler and the Nazis. When I see that word Husseini, I say I didn't do my homework on that because I always just remember that the Grand Mufti around that time of period was a extremely evil man. But Fosdick is quoting him as saying he's a man of religion and a man of peace. Well, anyway, moving right along. now he shifts over to the plans for the new building of the Riverside Church. It says, the plans for the new building were drawn in 1926, but 5 busy years passed before the Riverside Church was dedicated. I'm often asked how we came to select the site on Morningside Heights. The major reason, I suspect, was the fact that already so many educational and religious institutions had begun moving to the Heights that it was clearly going to be one of the foremost cultural centers in the nation, and no adequate Protestant parish church was there to minister to the countless thousands who were being drawn to the neighborhood by its unique opportunities. Columbia University already was there, liberal, with its affiliated institutions, Teacher College and Barnard College. The Union Theological Seminary was across the street from our chosen site, mega liberal, and then it says the Jewish Theological Seminary, the Juilliard School of Music, etc. And then further down the page, it says, the Cathedral of St. John the Divine, having laid its cornerstone in 1892, was slowly beginning its progress toward becoming one of the 2 or 3 largest cathedrals in the world. I did not realize that all of these ultra-liberal establishments, this hotbed of liberalism and spiritual harlotry, I didn't realize they were all so close together. Union Theological Seminary, Columbia University. I think I did know about Columbia University and Cathedral of St. John the Divine, but the Cathedral of St. John the Divine, oh my gosh, what a tribute to spiritual harlotry that place is to this day. Now, I think the last comment that I want to make concerning Fosdick, Dr. Fosdick, Harry Emerson Fosdick, is something I found just today as I was doing my devotional time, and I was looking up something in another section of the Bible in Hebrews. I was looking in J. Vernon McGee's commentary for something, and my eyes, just this just statement jumped out at me, that name, Dr. Harry Emerson Fosdick, it jumped. I said, what is this, And anyway, this is kind of, the last statement. It may not be the very last statement. His name may come up further down in my podcast or in future podcasts. But this is what McGee said. Years ago, just so you know, if you haven't heard enough about Dr. Harry Emerson Fosdick, one of the leaders of the modernists in the fundamentalist-modernist battle years ago, Dr. Harry Emerson Fosdick said that the world tried to get rid of Jesus in two ways. One was by crucifying him, and the other was by worshiping him. Now McGee says, my friend, it is blasphemy to say that if you worship him, you are no better than those who crucified him. Of course, McGee, he knew all about Harry Emerson Fosdick, as hopefully you will now, if you didn't before. All right, I have a little time left. Let me move on now to the Berean Call article, which, of course, I had started this series with, and this is from page 2 of the article by T.A. McMahon. And here's what it says. If AA can make no true claim of being more effective than the non-treatment spontaneous remission of drunkenness by alcohol abusers, what of its spiritual input? That spirituality, and of course we've talked a lot about the spirituality that AA is comfortable with and also uncomfortable with, that spirituality is incorporated in the 12-step philosophy and is foundational to everything that AA promotes. As noted above, Tim Stafford and Christianity Today declared, we ought to use them, 12-step programs, gladly. They belong to us originally. They are doing tremendous good. All right. Well, I think I'm going to close on that note, and we will continue on in this study, looking at fake Christian magazines and the emphasis in one or two of them, or on more than one or two of them, but they're a recognition and promotion of Alcoholics Anonymous. So be with us next week. God bless you all. Good night.